Right, well, I hope you can all hear me, because if I sound as bad to you as I sound to myself, I'm very, very croaky at the moment. I just had a cold. But you probably noticed that Joe was reading all that, and the reason is very simple. Unfortunately, I've got to advise him. He's got to be very careful what he says, and it's a very sad thing, because I don't know whether the police are going to be watching out or trying to listen to him or trying to pick him up on something in order to complicate this issue and to try and defend what they've done. And that's a very sad situation when you've got to give a very decent, respectable member of society that sort of advice. And it does make me worried about the way we're going as a society. And Humphrey said, well, you know, get things out of proportion. We can still have this meeting and so forth. Without trying to be over-pessimistic, just remind you, if you don't already know, that the Soviet Constitution, when it was written under Joseph Stalin, actually defended the right of religious worship, not the right of religious expression. It was very precise. Everybody in the Soviet Union had the right of religious worship and the right of anti-religious propaganda. And I wonder whether we're, in a way, moving towards that today. Now, I realise this meeting's been called by the Christian Institute, and Humphrey's quite naturally put the issues here on a Christian issues and the right to preach about Christian views on homosexuality, the family. And I can understand and respect that point of view, but I'm not here to talk tonight really from a Christian perspective, because, frankly, I don't see what's happened to Joe and Helen as being a peculiarly Christian issue. I think it is an issue that should concern everybody in this society. All of us, Christians, Muslims, atheists, even gays, should be concerned about what has happened to Joe and Helen. Because at the end of the day, it's about the freedom of all of us in this society to express our opinions and to disagree with one another. Because that is the essence of a free society, the right to disagree. I think the people who profoundly disagree with Joe and Helen should be very concerned about what has happened to them. I was reading recently a journalist who was very active during the McCarthy era in America. He was very anti-communist, this journalist, but he was very concerned by how Senator Joe McCartney was treating people suspected of communism. One of the things he wrote was that, in his opinion, one of the most fundamental principles of a free democracy was that you had the right to be wrong. You had the right to be wrong. And we have to defend that right. And he said, well, that was a great thing about America, that people had the right to be wrong. And I think what's happened to Joe and Helen is, for me, as a lawyer, crossed a very important line in the sand. It's something that has shocked me very much. Because when you have the state in the shape of police officers, that's the power of the state. And it's most brutal in its dealing with its citizens. And we need police, don't get me wrong, we do. And I respect them, I worked with them for many years. I respect and I admire the police. But the police are the expression of the authority of the state. When you have police officers coming to a private house to tell somebody that they can't express in a peaceful manner their own views to anybody, let alone not being allowed to express their views to their local authority, then you're in a very, very dangerous, slippery slope. And, you know, during the Second World War, Churchill was once asked, he was asked many times, but he once asked, what was it we're fighting for? What's the real difference between Britain and Nazi Germany? And he said the difference was this, that in Britain we didn't fear the knock of the secret policeman's knock on the door. And I wonder if he could say that today. I wonder if he could say that in Fleetwood, in Lancashire, today. And I want to want people to do, when they go from this meeting, is to talk about this in this to other people. Don't just talk to Christians. Don't just talk to people who come to church with you. Talk to others. Talk to friends. Talk to workmates. What people who don't believe Christianity, people of other religions, people who just couldn't have any time with religion, people you know who are gay. And say to them, this is important for you. Not just for me, but it's important for you. And if they say, well, how is it important to me? Say, well, this is how dictatorships start. And they say, oh, come off it. Well, it is. It starts in little ways, and it builds up. And that, it was expressed very clearly by a German Lutheran pastor. Some of you may have heard of him, Pastor Niemeyer. He lived through the Nazi period. And he wrote about it afterwards in a poem about how the Nazi totalitarianism began and how it built up. And he said, first they came for the Jews, and I was a Christian, so I said nothing. And they came for the communists, but I wasn't a communist, so I said nothing. And they came for the Catholics, well, I was a Protestant, so I said nothing. And then they came for me. And there was nobody left to speak for me. And that's the point to try and make people understand in a far wider context. Okay, today it's Joe and Helen being given a bit of a talking to. Tomorrow, maybe one of you, something you've said. The day after tomorrow, it's your friend who's not religious at all. Where does it stop? Don't just remember religious people like Iqbal Soekarno or whatever. And I don't have any great respect for Iqbal Soekarno, the person. But he's got the right to his opinions. But what about that lady who got arrested for protesting, just for reading out a list of names? What about Walter Wolfgang, who gets thrown out of the Labour conference? A conference of a party he's a member of, just for shouting rubbish. And then gets arrested under the Terrorism Act. So, you know, there are bigger issues here. Walter Wolfgang, ironically, came to this country fleeing Nazi Germany. The Nazi Germany that Pastor Niemeyer was writing about. So, there are bigger issues. But, I mean, let's start off from the very basics on this. It's very easy. We've all had a bit of a laugh about political correctness, and I know, you know, the media write about it, and you know everybody said, "Ah, political correctness gone mad," and you know we also forget about it. I mean, it affects me. I mean, I like Scottish country dancing, but I'm not going to tell anybody I don't like the Gay Gordons these days because you know I don't know what the reaction's going to be. It's funny, isn't it? It's not funny when you've got two police officers knocking on the door and telling you you're treading on eggshells. That's not political correctness gone mad. That's worse. It's not a joke anymore. I've laughed about political correctness, but this isn't funny. So let's be clear and unambiguous about a couple of points here. Joe and Helen Roberts have not committed any crime. They didn't break any law when they spoke to Wyre Borough Council's officers. Wyre Borough Council had no legal right to report them to the police. And the police had no legal right to go round to their house. And I'll say this now. If Wyre Borough Council or Lancashire Police disagree with what I've just said, if they say, well, yeah, there was a potential crime, or they say, yes, we had the legal right, then could they please let us know what it is? Because Joe and Helen have written letters. They've written letters to the Lancashire Police and to Wyre Borough Council saying very clearly, very simply, what possible crime could we have committed? What was your legal right to report us to the police? And to the police, what was your legal right to come and visit us? Neither Wyre Borough Council nor the police have replied to those questions. I'm a lawyer. It's my job to look through the criminal law. I haven't got a clue what the offence is. It looks like I'd like to know if there is one. Tell me, because I don't know. We've had, the letters said from Wyre Borough Council, a potentially homophobic comment. Potentially homophobic? Right, well, great. Do you phone up the police and say, hi, I think somebody is potentially a thief? Well, and the police say, well, we've got to investigate every allegation. Phone up the police and tell them, oh, by the way, somebody's broken the window of my car, and see how quickly they come around and respond. What was actually appalling about the replies and police and Wyre Borough Council, I think particularly Wyre Borough Council, was the utter and complete contempt, in my view, with which they treated Joe and Helen. The citizens within them, council taxpayers, voters. The general manager of Wyre Borough Council said that somebody, an employee, unnamed employee, had made this report to the police. The manager couldn't say whether he was right or wrong because it was all a matter of personal opinion. Well, and it wasn't up to him, the general manager, to say whether this person was right or wrong. I don't know how much the salary is for general manager of Wyre Borough Council, but whatever it is, he's being overpaid if he doesn't know the basics of the law. If an employee does something in the course of their employment, their employer is liable. It's vicarious liability. If you want, for a very modest fee, I'll give you a lecture on it. But not tonight, possibly. Any chief exec, any manager in the local authority knows that. They're just trying to hoodwink them. They thought, oh, well, I don't know, just palm them off, go away, don't bother us, we're important people. That was what the letter was saying. He said, I can't say right or wrong. Is their employee, the actions of their employee? They've got to say whether it's right or wrong. If they go to court, they'll have to say whether it's right or wrong. Because they're responsible. And the police said that, well, you know, it was a homophobic incident. What is a homophobic incident? I haven't got a clue. That's the danger, isn't it? You use this very vague phrase, oh, it was potentially homophobic, or it was a homophobic incident. Sorry, you know, these are the police. They're supposed to be enforcing the law. They're supposed to know what it is. Supposed to be precise. Homophobic incidents. It's a bit like under Stalin, they used to say, oh, somebody's a Trotskyite. What does that mean? Oh, it doesn't matter. It's just as a Trotskyite. We don't have to explain it anymore. That's the end of the story. And that's how it's working. So the police haven't said what the crime was, and they ought to know. They ought to know. Because if they get they didn't just get a report, oh, somebody's being beaten up. What, we've got to run into the police car and zoom round. They got a report to a few weeks later. Well, did they get a proper report? Did they get a statement from the person? They should have done. That statement, rightly or wrongly, should have revealed a crime. If it doesn't reveal a crime, then what were they doing going around to somebody's house in the first place? So the police have either gone round to Joe and Helen's house, knowing there's no crime committed, and just to put the frighteners on them, or they couldn't even be bothered to get a proper crime report, in which case they're totally incompetent. And actually, I don't believe that the Lancashire police are that incompetent. I've worked with them. They're a very good, efficient police force. I have great respect for them. And I actually think that an awful lot of their police officers are actually deeply ashamed of what has been done in their name. And the fact is that all that Joe and Helen asked for in their letter was either justify what you have done or just say sorry. Give us an apology. Not much to ask for, is it? Just to say, sorry, we were wrong. They haven't done that. Oh, they sort of tried to. I think it was sort of, well, we're perfectly right and justified in what we did. But if what we did upset you in any way, we're very sorry about that. That's not an apology. You know, I didn't kick the brick, I didn't throw a brick through your window, but if it upset you, I'm sorry about it. That's not an apology, is it? No. They haven't even got this, the common decency at this stage, just to say, sorry, we made a mistake. I'm not asking, you know, Joe and Helen weren't asking for the chief executive or the chief constable to resign. They weren't asking the chief executive to walk down the high street of Fleetwood in sackcloth and ashes. Just to say, sorry, we made a mistake. But they haven't done that. And I think the reason why they haven't done that is this. Bluntly, they think they can get away with it. Now, then that's the problem Joe and Helen have got here. Now, Joe and Helen can, I believe, sue Lancashire Police and Wyre Borough Council. A number of things. Breach of the Human Rights Act, Article 9, freedom of religion. Article 10, freedom of expression. Freedom of home and correspondence, Article 8, freedom, Article 13, anti-discrimination, negligence in not investigating properly, negligence in not having a proper system for reporting complaints. They've even, and that's just the starters. But to do that, that's a problem. Because taking legal proceedings, well, it's expensive. No, right, not just because of me. Lawyers like me, I know. That's probably what you're all thinking. That's not really the issue. Because there are a number of lawyers who do take these things seriously. And would be willing, myself and others, willing to help either freely or to do it on a no-win, no-fee basis. Now, you see, there's a bigger problem than that. If Joe and Helen go to court, and if they lose, then they have to pay the other side's costs. That's the real problem that they've got. And it doesn't matter me telling them they've got a great case. No lawyer is going to say to anybody, absolutely cert. But no lawyer can ever guarantee that. I'm certainly not going to say that to them. And if they lose, they're going to have to pay the other side's legal costs. There's a real unfairness here. If Joe and Helen win, then Wyre Borough Council and police will have to pay their costs. The chief constable's not going to pay them, personally, out of his own pocket. And the general manager of Wyre Borough Council isn't going to pay their costs out of his own pocket. No, the poor old council taxpayers will pay. But if Joe and Helen lose, they pay it out of their own pocket. And that can't be allowed. So let's be quite clear about this. If you have a think about this meeting, if you support Joe and Helen, there's no point saying, Joe and Helen, we're right behind you, if what you mean is, I'm well behind you. They've been very courageous in standing up, and I do want them to continue with this. But we cannot, in any conscience, ask them to put their property, their savings at risk for something that's important to everybody. I know the Christian Institute are trying to set up a fund. They're trying to get guarantees for various people and organisations before any legal proceedings are commenced. I think that's important. We have to try and get people to do that. So I'm going to stress the word guarantees. We're not asking for money up front. No, the Christian issue, I'm sure they'll be delighted with money up front. They usually are, but aren't we all? But that's not really what this is, the essence of this. They're looking for guarantees. Hard, solid guarantees. If the case is lost, there will be cover to cover any legal costs that Joe and Helen might have to pay. I mean, let's say we had 10 churches that guaranteed £5,000 each. That's £50,000. Okay, £5,000 is a lot of money, I know that. But I'm just trying to pick that figure as something manageable. Maybe not impossible. I want you people to go away, particularly people who are influential in the churches or whatever, in groups, to try and think about it. Because I think it's got to be something maybe done through churches or whatever. It's not practical for individuals to sort of say, look, I'll guarantee £100 here and £100 there. It just doesn't work like that. You know. And think about this. Today it's Joe and Helen. Okay, and tomorrow, well, could likely be, probably be me, actually, the way things are going. The day after tomorrow, one of you? Or the minister in your church? I don't know. Ridiculous, exaggerated. If you told me 5 years ago that this would have happened, I would have said this was ridiculous and exaggerated. And it's happened. And it shocked me. And I'm a fairly hard-bitten, cynical barrister who's been through the criminal justice system for quite a few years and thought, really, I was unshockable. And it has shocked me. And I'm not some sort of bleeding-hearted liberal, in case you happen to think I am. I spent 8 years as a Crown Prosecutor. I prosecute and defend. I do both. As I say, I respect the police. I work with them. I respect their role. But I respect their role as protectors of society. As protectors of citizens, what worries me is the way their role is being corrupted and changed to become the rulers of society. I'm going to finish now. I'm going to finish on a point that at the beginning will probably seem like a complete and utter digression, but please bear with me. I'm going to talk about a film. Some of you might have actually seen this film. It's called A Question of Life and Death. And it was released in 1946, 60 years ago. In the film, David Niven plays the part of an RAF pilot. And he's coming back from a bombing raid, and he's supposed to die. That's the plan. That's his time's up. But through a mix-up, he doesn't die, because the angel who's sent to get him gets lost. And so he survives. And before the angel can get to meet him and say, sorry, you're supposed to be dead, David Niven meets this American girl and falls in love. There's then a trial in heaven as to whether David Niven should actually die or be allowed to continue living. Now, a lot of the film involves this trial. And a lot of the film is about the differences between England and America, because that's what the theme of the film. And during the trial, there's an American who talks about America, the land of the free. And he says, the American love of freedom. And he quotes the American First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution that guarantees freedom of speech, freedom of religion. And the Englishman who defended David Niven, he replies, well, in England, yeah, we don't have a U.S. We don't have a Constitution because we don't need it. We don't have a First Amendment. Because it's not necessary in England. And what he says is, in England, a man may think and speak as he pleases on matters of religion or politics. Now, that film was released in 1946. It was written and it was made in the years 1943 to 45. And those were years when freedom wasn't just some airy fairy theory. People were fighting and dying for it. And the question I'm finding myself being forced to ask is, I'm wondering whether all the people who fought and died in the war actually fought and died in vain and for nothing. Because what on earth was the point of this country fighting a war to prevent itself being ruled by Hitler and the Gestapo, if we now allow ourselves to be ruled by our own homegrown little Hitlers, and we allow our own police force to be corrupted into some sort of Orwellian thought police? What was the point? I fear, that the England that people fought for in the war, an England where man may think and speak as he pleases, has been stolen from us. And I think it's time that we've got to start fighting back, to get it back. But I think there's something else. I think that idea of England as a country where somebody can think and speak as they please on matters of religion and politics is a noble idea of England. And I think it's an England that's worth fighting for. Thank you.